You are listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Let me make sure I know what's going on. It should be patently obvious that I do not.
Patently.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say patently or patently?
Patently.
Mm-hmm. I should have a patent on the obviousness that I do not know what is going on. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dennis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, with a head cold from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
You know what's going to help that head cold?
What would help
One
that?
Of these Portland ginger
oh,
brews.
Hells yeah.
It's going to clear you right up. I turned it upside down for you already.
Thank
Inverted
you.
The bottle.
Thank you. I'll have to wait a second before.
Yeah. We are the
All
show
the
that
stuff's already off the bottom. Great. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say that we're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way, like that ginger brew. And our guest over here is enjoying something from Fort George, which we'll talk about in just a minute. And I'm actually not enjoying it yet. I have a beer in front of me that I will open. All of these purchased at Beer Mongers because we love that place. Those guys are pretty cool.
They're all right.
So, where are we leaving? Oh, what are we talking about?
Yes, and then I'm supposed to say covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living. And today, once again, the Benson twins.
That's right. Yes, they are twins. Fraternal twins. And what's the other one?
Identical.
Yes.
Fraternal identical twins.
At the same time.
Brian Benson, hello. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm okay. I am actually dragging because while most people had a spring break last week, I did not. I was working at training, actually. I was being trained to train people how to drive school buses, which was an exciting thing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I was doing that last week, too.
Oh, really?
No.
Dude, you and I have so many similarities. Yeah, I spent a week listening to people talk and driving buses around. I got upgraded so that I can now drive an 84-passenger school bus.
Mm. Oh, yeah, you snapped a picture of that.
That's
freaking huge.
It's enormous. It's only 40 feet long, but it's a big bus. So most of my week was spent driving those around and learning how to do things with them.
Is it bigger than the Cascadia Cruiser?
It's about the same size.
Okay.
So what I found out was that there was some homework stuff I had to do as well. So I was not only going to class and driving big buses around the town of Salem, Oregon, I was also working on a project where I had to construct a route to train people on. That had to be approved by the ODE. So that was like, I don't know how much of my grade that was a part of, and it hasn't been graded yet, so I don't know if I passed.
Oh, no.
But I feel pretty confident in that. So anyways, that's what I spent all of last week doing. Did not do anything I wanted to do until like Thursday evening. So, and then Thursday evening, I walked to the capital of Oregon.
I looked
at the gold leaf statue, which is called the Oregon Pioneer, I want to say.
Huh.
Yeah, he's this tall dude that's like facing northward and looking west.
Like the statue is like coated in gold leaf?
It is.
It's a statue of a giant gold leaf.
Oh, it's coated in gold leaves.
Oh, okay.
And leaves of gold, they're not actual leaves, but it's gold that's been hammered out in the shape of a leaf. They're really careful and cautious to make it look like an actual tree leaf. Yeah.
Gold is an interesting metal in that you can hammer it to one molecule thick.
Wow. Whoa. That's crazy.
That was a fact.
Were you aware of this, Brian?
I was not, no. Yeah.
Neither am I until now.
Yep.
That's fascinating. Wow. Okay. So suffice to say, I did not sleep much. But I did that. Then I came home, and I stayed up late and went to a rock show. And then I went to see my family up on the Washington coast. So I have not yet rested. I intend to rest tomorrow.
When I'm the seventh day.
When I'm dead, yeah.
Wait, you don't have to go to... You do have to go to work tomorrow.
I have to go to work, but then in the middle of the day, I'll rest.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
You, sir, have been building a wheel.
No.
No.
I've been building two wheels.
Oh, that's a good clarification.
Yesterday and all of today spent threading and lacing the spokes on my front and rear wheels.
Does that make you nervous at all?
It did right at first. I did everything super well, the front wheel, because that's the easiest.
Right.
And then went onto the rear wheel. Still was, like, really careful, but missed just one small detail.
Ah.
And it's one of those things where, like, if you're threading the spokes in,
uh-huh,
and you have, like, you know, you space them out, you know, so
right,
many different, mm-hmm, spokes, like, apart or holes apart,
mm-hmm,
as you're doing this. And I was off by one on one spoke.
Uh-oh.
And didn't notice this until, like, I was at least 12 more spokes ahead of that.
Does that mean you had to take all of them,
like,
out?
Lice into the nipples, too, so you have to detach all of them?
Well, I didn't, but I was at this one spot where I was, like, cramming the,
yeah,
spoke into the nipple to try to thread it, and was just, like, frustrated. Why can't I do this?
In other news, the part that you use to attach the spoke to the rim is called a nipple. Just
right,
to clarify.
Clarification, yes.
For anyone who might not know.
I couldn't say it for a long time without snickering.
I wouldn't think so. You got to twist a lot of nipples to build a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you built wheels before?
I've not. This is my first set of wheels.
Awesome.
I finally got it done. I should clarify. I've got them laced.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
The tension and the dishing and all the other stuff to make it complete will come tomorrow, maybe?
Okay.
I feel like the lacing is, for me, the hardest part and the most frustrating.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah, once you get it together, it's, you know, tedious and kind of long to do all the tensioning, but I think it's fun. Right.
Right.
It's very satisfying once you're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Like, once I've got that, like, laced, I was like,
that
oh, my
like
God.
That was,
yeah. Yeah.
Being done is the best part.
Well, yeah, once it's laced, yeah. Like, mm-hmm, it's... You know how the brain works. All those reward endorphins secrete all at once. What you got there?
Oh, this is the P-51 Porter from Wingman Brewers up in Tacoma.
Right on.
Yeah. I was going to ask, Brian, how many wheels have you built?
I've built probably maybe three or four sets.
Three or four sets. That's at least six wheels.
I think so. Yeah. Could be six to eight. Who knows, really?
It's a lot of wheels.
Wait, is one of them a trike? That changes things a lot.
I've just built wheel sets a bunch because I've taken them on tours.
Yeah.
And I bust the rear wheel. I've had a wheel stolen. I, like, about a month after building my first wheel, I got hit by a car.
Oh,
and
man.
I ended up looking like a Dolly painting.
Oh, wow.
No.
So
I
had
the
opportunity
the table.
To learn a lot about wheel building.
Okay.
Yeah, it was dripping off the table. It was really weird. It turned into candle wax.
That's intense, man. But it's a great skill to have because, I mean, that I go through a wheel every year.
Yeah.
And as much as I like the people at Velocult building wheels for me, they do a fantastic job. I should know how to do that. And I want to say that the first, maybe it's not the first.
What is
but,
it?
Oh, no, there's just a Rivendell on their website, Rivendell Bikes,
yeah,
has a list of tips of things you should do. And one of those is, at least once, build your own wheel.
Build your own wheel.
Yeah.
Yep. What is it that you wear out? Is it the hub or the...
Generally the rims, yeah,
okay,
because I have rim brakes, and so
right,
you know,
right.
I have one bike I use for everything, and that wheel goes through all kinds of dust in the summer and grit in the winter, and yeah.
Imagine if you just get a hardier hub, you could probably hang on to that same hub and just relace it to different rims each time.
Definitely, yeah. You can do the rim transfer where you, like, tape all the spokes together so they don't move out of their configuration, and then just drop the new rim on.
Are you serious?
I had to do that one time after I'd not done it many times.
Really?
That saves, yeah, because it saves all the nonsense of trying to figure out how the spokes lace together,
right,
and, you know, getting that configuration right.
Yeah. So how important is it that you start with new spokes? Can you just, like, take the old ones and use them if they're still holding up?
I shouldn't speak as an expert here.
Oh, okay.
I'll speak
talk to one who is.
Oh, hey, look who's here.
Leah Benson, now just joining the studio.
Let me turn
expert
her
wheel
mic
builder.
Down here.
Straight from
Portland's
the tax
best.
Man. It's good to see you, Leah.
Ex-woman.
Yeah. Well, oh, it was. Okay, excuse
me.
See, there's a problem. There's another gendered problem.
Yeah.
I'm not. I am making assumptions about the fact that the tax preparer is a man.
I'm leaving.
When the tax preparer is not. So I apologize
hey, it's
for that.
The tax preparer.
That's right.
The song doesn't quite have the same ring.
It's like, what was it? Hey, Mr. Postman from the Carpenters? Is that it? Or who sang that?
I couldn't tell you. No, it's not.
I don't think the Carpenters.
Probably not.
I think we're talking like Phil Spector.
Some oldies thing. Yeah,
yeah,
with a wall of sound.
The Carpenters were more like
If I had a hammer.
Yeah.
They were on top of the world.
Mm-hmm. They were on top of the world.
Okay. Well, anyways, all that to say, hello.
Hello.
We were just talking about building wheels.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. And what were we asking? Can we reuse spokes? Like,
can you reuse the old spokes?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's physically possible to reuse spokes, but like, would you do that if you were building a wheel?
Not if I was doing it for a customer.
Okay. What if you were building one up from an old hub that you had lying around?
I think it depends. I'd say only if you were experienced enough at wheel building that you knew when a spoke was too far gone.
Oh, okay.
So Jim, who works at the shop with me, is like a master reuser of parts. And he's built many a wheel for himself using used spokes, hubs, rims, whatever. Mm. But that's because he really knows what he's doing and has looked at many spokes and hubs to know what's worth saving and what's not.
Gotcha.
So I wouldn't recommend it if you don't feel like you're up to the task, because you could really, you know, hurt yourself.
Or if you have a really good friend who can just look at that for you and tell you, as they've told me, yeah, dude, you can totally reuse those spokes, then it's okay.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go.
You just need a friend.
Yes.
Don't we all?
Either a confident friend or a wise friend, mm-hmm. or both.
Cocky friend.
There we go.
Yeah.
Is that like halfway between? Is that fair to say?
Halfway between. I don't know. It's kind of its own category.
Okay. Well, hey, we should call Maren before it gets too much later, because I think she's waiting around for us. I had some Twitter things, but if you want to read the responses to Aaron's wheel building experience, that's
really?
Coming right up.
They're
on the Twitter. Let me call Maren here.
Who's Maren?
Oh, Maren Souders. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
We're going to call her right now because she has been working on a petition to Amtrak to provide vegan meals on their
this is what happens when you're late to class.
Oh, we get to listen to
Skype
song,
I didn't know either.
Too.
I like that Leah's response was to actually ask a question, whereas I just like vacantly stared at the wall and drooled a little bit. Good Maren.
Yeah, I just feel more entitled to knowledge.
This is our favorite song now. Everybody
Scott,
now.
Colin. What?
Hello?
Hey, Maren, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Sorry, we're just singing along to the Skype song that it makes when it calls somebody.
Oh,
yes. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's become far more rhythmic and bouncy since the last time I used Skype. So anyways, thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your evening to share. Tell us about what happened with your petition.
Well, I'm really, really excited about it. We gathered over 15,000 signatures. I contacted the CEO of Amtrak, and he forwarded my email to the VP of Customer Service, Tom Hall. And he got back to me within 48 hours and said something kind of supportive but a little bit tepid, like, yeah, sounds great. We've been kind of thinking about this. We'll keep it in mind. And also mentioned that they had tried some vegan options on the train before and had a lot of spoilage, and they're up against a lot of logistical and financial constraints. So I wanted to be persistent. It kind of sounded like that. He was hoping that would be the end of the conversation, and I did not want that to be the end of the conversation. So I wrote back and indicated that I wanted to continue the dialogue, and that it's, you know, made a few points about why it's important to have vegan options on the train, and also really took into account what he was saying about the constraints that they're under. And I believe that. And as a matter of fact, at one point I was kind of curious about this guy. So I Googled him, and I found some congressional testimony that he gave where a member of Congress was just kind of haranguing him about the food losses, food and beverage losses that Amtrak really does incur every year. It's kind of a loss for them. And anyway, so I could see that this was all very real, but I also still believe that having vegan options on the train not only is important for vegans, but, you know, it could really be a positive thing for Amtrak. It could help them bring in a new demographic and really kind of become more of a futuristic agency like they're hoping to do, not kind of a stodgy thing. So anyway, in addition to that, so I sent all this in a letter to him. Didn't hear anything back. And I was like, oh man, I really, you know, I got to keep working on this. So I put out the word to all the 15,000 people who had signed the petition and let them know that we needed some more letters, and people needed to write specific letters and talk about, suggestions and make really constructive suggestions as to the kinds of food they could have on there, or if anybody was, you know, knew anybody in the food service industry or anybody who could help in that way. So, you know, out of 15,000 people, probably only a handful of them even opened the email realistically, but five or six of those people did send really amazing letters, and I requested that they CC me on them. So I got to read them, and I was really impressed with how intelligent, articulate, persuasive, and positive they all were. And sure enough, within a week of this, of these letters kind of trickling in about once a day, Tom Hall got back to me and was willing to have a phone conversation with me. We had a great phone conversation, and he agreed to it.
Excellent. So what can we expect from Amtrak next time we're sitting in the dining car?
Well, it's going to be a year before this happens. They have a culinary advisory board that meets every October.
Okay.
And that's made up of, you know, chefs and cookbook authors and restaurant owners and things like that. And then they come up with, that culinary advisory board comes up with two menus for the following year, a spring-summer menu and a fall-winter menu. And so they're going to be rolling that out as of the next spring-summer menu. So probably about a year from now. And they haven't decided on the particular dishes yet, but I've been sort of helping them with that as well. So there should be some good options as of about a year from now.
Okay.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for your hard work on that petition, and really appreciate you taking the time to update us. It's good to have someone like you who cares working on that advocacy end. And for people that are not vegan but like vegan things, I salute you and say thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Have a great night.
All right. You too.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye. There we go. That's exciting news. That I don't know. It just seems like Amtrak is one of those organizations that is so entrenched and so like old school that they will never change. But just like the option of somebody having a roll-on service
roll-on
where you can
service,
hang
right.
your bike on a train and go, you know, from Portland to Chicago. I like this idea. So
I think they want to change too.
They do. Yeah, and a lot of people want them to change. It's just like it's slow because
yep.
we like the trains. Am I right?
No. So right. Can I just point out, too, Amtrak has culinary advisor.
Yeah, depending on your experience with Amtrak's food systems, you might or might not believe that.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I've only ever gone to the snack car.
Yeah, cafe
I realized,
car.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've had their meals in the dining car, and they're not bad.
Yeah,
but they are really meat and potatoes. So, like, if you don't like meat, you're not going to have a good time there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Marin, of course, for anybody who hasn't heard her interview yet, she was the one that was promised vegan meals and then found out they forgot to put her options on. And then she was stuck eating baked potatoes and side salads for, like, every meal for a couple days.
Oh,
so,
sadness.
Yeah, kind of a bummer.
But, yeah, especially when the difference between coach and a sleeper car arrangement, which includes the dining car.
Oh, right.
Is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty big difference in price. And mm-hmm. so when you're paying that premium.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
When Amtrak is late, which it often is. I love Amtrak, first of all.
Oh, me
too. I take
the
Empire Builder a million times. And almost every time it's been just massively, irrevocably late because a lot of the time of the oil, the fracking spills.
Oh, yeah.
But generally when they're late, they will either order Subway or KFC, or if it's like a really, really late one.
Oh, both. Really?
Really?
For vegans, wouldn't probably be the best thing to get like a huge tub of greasy, nasty fried chicken.
We got you
well,
that animal
Subway has
combo.
Some great vegan options.
It does.
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah. Pickle sandwich.
I believe we have Jared here to tell us a little bit more.
No, the Subway is one of my most favorite fast food restaurants because they don't look like a fast food restaurant. They're not supposed to be, but they really are. But they are my favorite, like, of all the ones. Like, if all I have is fast food to choose from, I will go to Subway.
You know, my boyfriend was a sandwich artist for a few weeks, and I think that's really what drew me towards it.
Days,
days.
Did he get pretty good at making sandwiches then?
I think there was a reason it was a short career.
Oh, okay, all right. He wasn't artistic enough.
No, but
or he was too artistic.
I think that's
wasn't his medium.
It.
Not a lot of call for Salvador Dali sandwiches.
That's that tomato is just kind of sliding off.
Not yet.
Not yet. He was just ahead of his time.
Yep. The sandwich of the future will be served by Amtrak.
Well, let's talk. First of all, we got a couple announcements, right? There's a couple of things I need to pull up. Can we mention Snack Parade?
Snack Parade.
It's live, right?
It's live. It's on a Tumblr.
It's on a Tumblr.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. We
We put it out there to the world. So far, we have 200-some downloads, as far as I can tell. I know. People are listening to us talk about absolutely nothing.
And Snack Parade is you talking about absolutely nothing?
Pretty much. Yep.
It's expound on that.
It's a podcast with me, Leah, from Gladys Bikes, and Natalie from Sweet Pea Bikes. And the tagline that we came up with was two bikey Portland ladies talking about what turns their cranks, because it's kind of cute and incredibly vague. Because it's it's mainly just the two of us talking about things that we talk to each other about pretty much every day.
That's like podcasting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think Barb Benson was an important part of the first podcast.
Barb Benson's a really important part of it. Our mother.
Yeah.
Our mothers are a really important part of the podcast in general.
Oh, nice.
I was really glad to see that there's actually a way to have people call in on phones here, because we had talked about that being a possibility without knowing how that happens.
I'll show you how.
Sweet. Yeah. So basically, our goal is to be two women who own businesses in the bike industry, talking about what it's like to do that, but also everything else that encompasses our lives.
Especially snacks.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of goes without saying that snacks are a part of our lives and everyone's lives. Am I right, guys?
I like the, on the website, or somewhere, one of your social media profiles has, it's just donuts.
Yeah.
Floating around in space.
Yeah, those were actually, that comes from a fabric that I made cycling caps out of for the shop. They were the donuts in space cycling caps. Yeah, they were.
Those went fast, right?
Those went fast. Yeah. I got them and they were gone within 48 hours.
I was lucky enough to get one.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you. I haven't seen you wear it yet.
It's because I gave it to someone else.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's because I sold it.
Yeah. Those things are worth a pretty penny these days.
At a premium.
Yeah. Sure, on Instagram, you can get quite a few dollars.
So it's snackparade.tumblr.com.
Snack paraders. Because someone took Snack Parade already.
Those bastards.
They're not even using it.
Oh. It's always all the best handles.
Yeah. It was Brian.
Brian just pointed to himself.
Why do you take everything I love?
And who produces this for you? How did you get a podcast made?
Well, let me tell you about it. We would not have anywhere near to anything without Aaron.
Oh.
Yeah.
Your engineer.
Our engineer, our everything, really.
I had a lot of fun. It was very hard. I got to say, it was very hard not to just like turn on my microphone and chime in from time to time. But wait.
That's when you you become the producer in the back. They're just like.
It was amazing.
Got a laughing off mic.
You're like the Kevin Eubank role. Yeah. Where you just laugh at everything they say.
Well, immediately after we like stopped recording, Aaron turns to us and he's like, wow, I was like. Really glad to be here. I just felt special. You guys like immediately like really opened up and went really deep. And that's the point at which we realized that like the reason that we get along is because we're both massive oversharers.
Nice.
So maybe the podcast should be like Snack Parade, a podcast for oversharers everywhere.
Oversharers Anonymous.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I don't know if it was right after the first episode, but sometime after the first episode, you mentioned how proud you were that you didn't mention bikes at all in the first episode, other than just saying that you guys rode bikes, and that was it.
Yeah.
That is true, yeah.
Which I began to feel a little bit weird about, like maybe we were supposed to talk about bikes, but we've been getting a lot of feedback from folks, actually, that it's really nice to have, like, quote-unquote bikey people talk about things that aren't bikes.
That are not bikes.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, right?
Well, just seeing the real issues facing the snack community.
We did delve into some voice, pretty finally. Real shit.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, well, consider, for example, the fact that, you know, it is possible to eat an entire pizza by oneself. I can testify to this because I have done
or
so.
Or more,
yeah.
The possibilities are endless.
The possibilities.
That's about as far as I'll go into that here. But if you're willing to do the independent research, you could yourself find out. There are anecdotes available online of how many pizzas might be consumed. Yeah. So
maybe even on this podcast.
Maybe.
Could be.
On a past podcast.
That was here too, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay. I talk about
that's
it a
right.
lot. I'm really
okay.
proud.
So really, we don't have to beat around the bush. This is an accomplishment. This is an achievement.
Yeah. I'm an eater, guys.
Yeah. There's a couple things I wanted to notice. We're still running our Spinlister credit contest. We have a $10 gift certificate to Spinlister, the bicycle peer-to-peer rental service. Someone tried to rent mine today, and it's not ready. The wheel isn't built yet, so they always come in at the wrong time. But yes, when did you most need a bike but not have one? So send us your anecdote. We will enter you into the running for that $10 credit to Spinlister. Inspired to Ride, the film, is coming. That's Nathan Jones, and he's been raving about the other participants as well.
I've got to work that night. I'm so disappointed.
Okay. Yes. Well, that means there's one more seat in that theater for one of our listeners who is available and wants to come to the showing.
Whoever tweets at us first.
Yeah, I want to say I paid $15 for my ticket, and it's probably going to be worth it. That's a great sell, isn't it? What I mean is it's a great film. And the trailer is up now, actually, and it looks awesome.
Speaking of Nathan Jones, he just posted a video on his Facebook of it just says, like, another lazy Sunday, but it's him riding a fat bike, like, on all of these different surfaces in and around town.
Oh, that's cool.
Going up and down stairs. One is, I believe, the Broadway Bridge stairs.
You mean, like
near NATO Parkway?
Oh, wow.
Is it NATO still at that point? But, yeah, anyways.
Like up the bridge stairs.
Down the bridge stairs.
Okay. Yeah. That's almost as impressive.
I wonder if his mom knows he's doing that.
Probably. Well, his mom's probably not on Facebook.
I wonder if our mom knows he's doing that.
She's worried.
She'd be so worried.
He's wearing a helmet.
Yeah. Well, that's good then. Okay. He's going to be all right.
But yeah. It was a cool video. It was really neat to see, you know, that... you don't have to have dirt to have a fat bike and have fun.
That guy's going to do wheelies on every continent soon.
Oh, yeah.
I bet. Yeah. But anyways, that's all happening. That's, what is it, the April 18th in Portland, and the film is going to other places as well. So there's that. And Rolling Oasis Grocers, former co-host Brandon Rhodes, is launching an expansion. I said it was a Kickstarter, but it's some other crowdfunding site. He's hosting an event at the Community Cycling Center's offices this Thursday. So if you want to help support a local business that is kind of starting up, getting bigger, and delivering healthy, organic, local produce to people by bike, these are all things we like. So that's happening. And we're going to have him and Michael from the Community Cycling Center in very soon.
Oh, sweet.
I think it might be next week, actually. I gotta look at my calendar. Anyways, that's happening. But the Kickstarter is
April's
showing.
Wide open.
Yeah, no kidding. But also, if you just like the idea of this and would like to see it get bigger, you don't have to come to the party. You can. It's a crowdfunding thing, so you can be on the crowd. You could be part of the crowd in the cloud.
There you
go. If you want, can I sell that to somebody?
Sounds like Care Bears.
Totally. So I think those are all of our announcements and. We were going to start with mail because we were going to wait for Leah to show up, but Leah's here.
I'm here.
So I wanted to talk about your adventure, Brian, because you just referenced something. I had no idea that was the case, but it sounds fascinating.
This is not why we had you in.
No, but now it is.
I felt like I had to do something this weekend because I had nothing else to talk about. I literally just laid on my face since the book came out doing nothing. So.
Oh, shit. What am I going to do? Yep. They got me on again.
Yeah. And then, Leah, you're here. So we want to pick your brain about things too.
I'm here.
So should we start with the kayaking adventure?
We could.
Tell us about your kayaking adventure, Brian. And Brian Benson, you also, just by the way, are the author, correct, of Going Somewhere?
I think so.
A memoir. Was there a tagline or a subtitle?
Yeah,
a bicycle journey across the United States.
That was it. Okay. Yeah. It was a great book. So last time I saw you in person, I had not finished the book.
I was so mad at you.
Now I have. And it was a fantastic book.
So at the point where you're at the northern shore of Superior.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. That's a good part. Yeah.
That's right around my only appearance in the book, I think.
Oh, really? I haven't got there yet.
Oh, no, you probably missed it. I think it was a little bit before it.
Oh.
Yeah.
She barfs on Mom.
Barfed on Mom.
There were other appearances, but they got cut. Unfortunately.
There's only so many times you can mention barfing in a book. You know,
right. Well, I mean, she did things besides barf.
Oh,
those
okay.
just didn't. You know, the editor felt that was her strongest element, really. So she comes through really well in this scene. Not so much with the dialogue.
Really good at eating things, and really good at like returning things that have been eaten. Yeah,
that's Mom.
True.
Yeah.
So anyways, there's that book. Where could people find that?
They can find it pretty much anywhere. At any bookstore here in town, you know, Powell's, Annie Bloom's, Broadway Books. But also I have a website, brianbensonwrites.com.
That's right.
So then there's links from that site to all the different places you can pick it up.
Thanks
Such
for reminding
as
me.
Gladys Bikes.
Oh,
that's right.
Gladys Bikes is a bookstore now.
No, just a Brian Benson
bookstore. Yes.
Very specific kind of bookstore.
It is a singular bookstore. It will sell you this one book.
Are there copies left at Gladys Bikes?
There are only two copies left. I need to reorder them.
There are two copies of Gladys Bikes. You could have this special, get mm-hmm. final two copies yeah. of Gladys Bikes.
You could hear me overshare about my brother in person while buying his book.
I might just be sitting in a chair awkwardly staring at you also. So. I do that. I loiter.
And this is all for free. This sounds like something you would pay for, an experience that would cost something somewhere else. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's like one thing to get an author to sign your book, but to have an author forcibly sign your book, it's another
come
thing
here,
entirely.
Let me sign that. Give it. Come here.
You're
come
not, here. Not allowed to leave. Yep. I like that my signed copy says, "I signed your crack." And I can't remember which of you came up with that.
That was definitely yes.
Because it was right along where the papers meet in
Brian,
the middle of the spot.
I think Brian's little... whatever you call that before you sign it, dedication?
Yeah, inscription, sure.
Inscription was like, why are you making me do this?
Oh, right, the pressure's on.
Yeah.
Too
I feel
much
like
pressure.
I had to come up with something witty in the moment, and I didn't, so then I just wrote about not coming up with something witty in the moment. If you
Which
get
is,
mad on it, you just confuse everybody.
Right, in itself right, is exactly. witty, yes, and so, you know, you kind of win on
so
both counts. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So, you had a kayaking adventure.
I did, yeah. I've got a friend, another Brian, actually.
Ooh.
We are Legion.
Compounded.
Here. Yep. And he has done this trip from Portland to Astoria for, I think, here his brother, actually an identical twin brother.
Really?
Much like
a real twin.
Hey, we already identified as identical and fraternal twins earlier today. Missed that. Yeah, like a real twin, I guess, if you want to put it that way. He and his brother have done it for 6 years now, and they've talked about it, and I haven't been able to make it. But yeah, this year I was able to, so we left on Friday from Portland. From the boat that I'm living on, actually, which is another thing entirely.
Let's talk about that next.
So from St. John's, and it was an 87-mile paddle over 3 days. And I had done a total of like 14 miles of paddling so far this year. So I really did a good job training. And then we did 35 the first day.
There we go.
And yeah, it was a great trip. So Brock, you said you were in Astoria. Did you see all the sea lions?
You know, I have been to Astoria and seen the sea lions before, but we weren't close enough to the docks this time around. We went the other way up to the column and climbed that and looked around, and so I got the big picture. But you and I were both at Fort George Brewing, possibly at the same time.
Maybe. Yeah.
Did you ignore each other when you saw it?
Well, I think we were in different bars, because I was the one that was upstairs that you have to climb the same circular staircase that you just climbed at the Astor Column. Then you have to do it again at the pub. Yeah. They have the same staircase, basically.
Nice.
It's shorter. But, yeah, you were at the other one, the tap
room.
Yeah,
and, like, sunburned, exhausted, not paying attention to anyone or anything besides
the beer,
really.
So it's probably good. I probably would have stressed you out if I had shown up. I know you.
Yeah, I would have just hidden under a table.
Been like, shut up, leave me alone.
Yep.
Yeah. So 35 miles a day?
The first day was that much, and then it was 30 and 25. And usually the current can be really nasty, and you can get a lot of headwind, which I hadn't really thought about on a kayak, but is as bad, if not worse, as with a bike.
Okay.
Same kind of thing. We had one solo kayak and then one tandem, and so we were just rotating, and there were a lot of sea lions out. So we were like counting and matching the number of sea lions with the miles, and it was a tight game. So we had three periods, and at the end of the first, I think it was like 34, 32 miles to sea lions. Then it was close at the end of the second period or the day as well. But then they just blew us out of the water on the third day, because there's this huge colony that has come up from San Francisco, because there's apparently a shortage of food.
Fascinating.
And it's like a bee horror movie when you get into a story. You just start hearing this like barks from a distance. But like, yeah, really guttural and terrible. And then we were trying to figure out where they were coming from, because it seemed like it was the middle of the river. And then we saw this buoy. And there were like five hugely fat sea lions like sitting on top of each other on this buoy, and other sea lions in the water barking up at them, and they're all on top like, no way, dudes, this is ours, we're never leaving.
They're all like playing King of the Hill or something.
Totally, yeah.
Just climbing on top
of
each
trying
other.
Trying to knock each other off. And then you get into the docks in town, and it's just this like big blubbery mess of sea lions, like thousands of sea lions.
That's the thing.
There.
So, Aaron, you and I, almost exactly a year ago, saw elephant seals on the sand.
That's
down
right.
In, what's it, San Mateo?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Down where the Hearst Castle is.
Yeah. I've been there.
Those
that
things
beach
look
is
so
terrifying.
They look so funny, just like laying there. They're like big slugs covered in fur. But then they move, and then they show you like their tusks or whatever, and you're like, that's not a slug, that's a mammal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they kind of popping up,
one
like,
to be reckoned with.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there were signs all over the place that said, warning, sea lions are aggressive. Like, stupid tourist kayaker.
I was going to say, like, in a kayak, Like, you don't really have much recourse if they decide to, like,
yeah,
you know,
just kind of cross your fingers
you or whatever.
There were definitely a couple times where they'd pop up and they, like, arc themselves out of the water and look at you for a really long time. And they just do it over and over again. And then they'll just disappear under the surface. And so we were just waiting for one to come up, like, underneath us and knock us over.
Right, right.
But it didn't happen. They got within a few feet several times, though.
Okay. I was just listening to NPR about the controversy about SeaWorld and the orcas that are there, or the killer whales. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about being in the water with big mammals and how that really doesn't sound like that much fun.
Yeah. Is there a new controversy with SeaWorld?
No, it's the old one, the blackfish thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, though, NPR at Fresh Air, they did a great, like, both sides sort of thing.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. There was some author who just wrote a book, and then SeaWorld executive guys. I think the author was probably a better – I think he was more right on.
I was going to say, is there another side?
There's the SeaWorld side.
Yeah.
And they had those guys on. And not because I'm some crazy liberal, even though I am. But, you know.
I have a very conflicted relationship with zoos. But in the meantime, like, whales, sea lions, dolphins, they're way more intelligent than the average animal at a zoo, except for maybe elephants. And so... I don't know. Something about a really intelligent animal that you forcibly capture and then, you know, keep in a pen with other animals that they didn't choose to live with or they may not want to live with.
Right.
It just seems like a recipe for disaster, really.
Do you think if they remake Star Trek IV that instead of coming back and getting blue whales, they're going to come back and get, like orcas?
If they remake Star Trek IV...
It's the one where they slingshot around the sun.
Yeah.
And then they, like, beam whales into the Enterprise.
Oh, that's right.
Travel back to the future and save the world, and the probe leaves. Maybe it'll be orcas in the remake.
Because orcas are now way more important.
Yeah, and whales. They could keep it, like you know, current. So
exactly.
Anyways, we're talking about seals in the...
I have a confession. I've never actually seen an episode of Star Trek.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
It's a weird religion. I think Johnny K called it the weird religion of Star Trek.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's because we were fighting for, like, what? I wasn't even here. Over this last summer, you were fighting with various guests about whether Sulu was a commander, like what color his shirt was.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was Lillian that started that whole thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then,
so
Tim Mooney, a fellow Trekkie.
Oh, true.
And podcaster and guest.
We can argue about it if you want.
Yeah,
with
sure.
Like, actually, no, the shirt was Periwinkle.
I'm great at
definitely
just
Periwinkle.
Shit up.
I want to see you two argue that point without knowing anything about it. I was going to ask about the tandem kayak versus a single kayak. I have limited experience. The only time I went kayaking, I dumped myself into Puget Sound and I lost my expensive glasses.
Yeah.
So I bought cheaper ones afterwards. But
was that solo or tandem kayak?
That was a solo kayak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But did you have a preference between the two?
It was kind of nice rotating between them because the tandem, you definitely don't work as hard. And you just end up going kind of faster. And, like, one person will take the rudder in the back and the other one can just sit up front and steer. So it could be a nice break and, you know, talk to somebody for a little bit.
Okay.
But the solo was really fun because it's much, much lower to the water. And you maneuver much more quickly, a much more nimble boat. So you could just kind of go off on your own. And it felt more like kayaking. You know, the tandem's like a canoe.
Yeah.
But it was really tiring, too. I mean, keeping up with a tandem in a solo kayak is just twice the work, basically.
Wait, were there three of you that went?
There were three of us.
I thought there were only two this whole time.
We learned so much every day.
I was thinking, I'm like, why did you have a tandem and... two people.
Well, yeah,
Why would you take turns?
Yeah, we put a labradoodle on the back. We just thought we needed a mascot. So.
Not a figurehead, but actually to steer the kayak.
Yeah.
The labradoodle was doing this.
Yeah, we taped him back there.
Wait, so it was two Bryans and what was the other guy?
Two Bryans and a Jeff.
Okay, perfect.
Coming out soon on Station Nobody Watches. Yeah.
On Stars.
Sorry, any Stars executives who might be listening
to
the podcast.
That's right. We totally lost that sponsorship.
Yeah, there goes those down.
So you did not warm up a lot for this. Said the trip happens every year. Had you done it before? Or this is your first time?
Yeah, okay. This is my first time out there.
So comparing bicycle touring to tandem touring, Were you camping or were you hoteling or something?
There were a lot of similarities in just that every single small town along the riverbanks we would stop in and check out. You know, and it's from a very different vantage point. You approach any town on the river and it just looks like Waterworld, you know, totally dystopic because no city or town really cares for its waterfront in the way that, that they will on land to try to project this image. Like, have you guys seen Portland from the water?
Only once or twice.
From the water, no.
Outside of the main area, basically between the Broadway Bridge and I guess like the Selwood? I guess a little bit further south. Yeah, almost down to the Selwood. It looks like Portland wants you to think it looks, but man, you get north of the Broadway Bridge and it is messed up.
Like
aquatic housing project looking things that are crumbling into the water and big docks that aren't really in use anymore, some that are. Tires all over the place over these piers. A lot of industrial pollution or things that look like it, but it's cool. It's really, really great. And it you know, shows Portland is the city that it is, that we don't get to see that often, which is a city that is a massive port, right?
Right.
And tons is happening down there, but it's really easy to just forget that there are, like, enormous container ships that are coming through the city all the time and moving, you know, all the way down the Columbia and then out across the Pacific Ocean and just forgetting that part of the city.
It's kind of nuts, just like thinking about it from a totally different perspective. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with William Least Heat Moon?
Yeah, you can River Horse.
Yeah, did you read that?
I just picked it up. I read Blue Highways and loved it.
Okay,
and,
I have not read Blue Highways, so either of you two know what we're talking about?
Nope.
William Least Heat Moon.
Sulu's shirt was red. later on, it started yellow.
I think it was hypercolor, actually.
Whenever he got really nervous. Yeah. Got kind of dark.
The sweat stains are really embarrassing.
This guy wrote a book about going across country by boat, which actually I think Tim Mooney recommended to me, which is why I read it. Mm-hmm. But fascinating. And he was talking about the idea that, like, you know, used to be rivers were the commerce routes. They were the way people got from one place to another. Mm-hmm. Everyone had a vibrant waterfront. And kind of like train tracks today, like, you just don't have as much going on near that anymore. So on his trip, I remember he said, like, every town he went to, they would have to climb up and find out if there actually was a town where they said there was a town.
Right, yeah. I mean, there was this town, Cathlamet, Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Which was super cool once we got up into it. But you pull up, and there's this barge family, tugboat family. It was, I cannot remember the last name, like Burkos or Barkos or something. But there were probably 10 tugboats, and they all had first names, too. So it was like Ellen Barkos and John and Bob. And they were, you know, all kind of slowly sinking into the water. Some of those were good, but there were a lot of old, rusty ships. You get up on shore. The first thing you see is a bar that is like a parallelogram. You know, it is leaning over sideways.
Oh, wow.
The next thing is the funeral home. And, you know, it doesn't get a whole lot better from the rest of the block. But then you get up onto the main street, and it's really cool. Like, a Mexican restaurant just opened, and there's a microbrewery. And it's, like, there are people walking around. And, but, yeah, you don't get that perception from the river.
Yeah, it says something to how cities orient themselves for traffic, right?
Definitely.
You generally arrive by car or bicycle or whatever, but rarely by water.
Yeah, so they don't really need to present their face to the water. I don't want to hog all the time here because
hog
this is a sibling podcast. But I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that I'm doing a project this summer on the Mississippi.
Are you?
A friend of mine owns a sternwheeler, so you know, like the old paddle boats.
The big paddle boat, yeah.
And we've been remodeling that, so it's going to be livable in like big quotation marks for three large men. And we're doing this project called the River Signal, which we're going to put the boat in just north of the Twin Cities. And go all the way down to New Orleans over the course of the summer.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really excited about that. And thinking a lot about that being like a highway, right?
Yeah.
And along the way, we're going to produce a fictionalized serial podcast called The River Signal, which is basically like a sort of a fictionalized version of the actual trip we're taking.
Yeah.
Set in a world that is dystopic and a little bit in the future where we're looking for this kind of mysterious river-based radio station. And
oh,
people
holy
broadcast
shit.
It.
This sounds so awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
I am excited about this.
When are you doing this?
We leave in June. We're going to be starting to publicize it and talk a lot about it over the next couple of weeks.
Very good.
We have so much to do.
You say you're still restoring the boat?
Yeah, I mean, the boat is, we've taken it out on the river quite a bit, but it doesn't have reverse right now, which presents a problem because those
should
are the brakes.
Always only be going forward. Anyways.
Yeah, right?
Never look back.
Needs it.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, like docking that thing, even in the best conditions, is like, you know that scene in The Matrix where, yes, I'm referencing this.
Where Keanu Reeves, like, stops the bullet and then it falls down, and then he goes inside Agent Smith.
That's exactly
that's what docking
like.
A boat is like every time.
Yes.
Also that, but also where Trinity is driving the or piloting the helicopter, and she has to bail out of it, and he's on the rooftop, and he comes like skidding to a stop with a rope wrapped around his arm that she's attached to,
yes.
And
he,
you know, skids all the way up and barely catches himself. That's kind of what docking this boat is like, because one person has to jump off onto the dock with a line, like skid the thing to a stop and try not to hit the huge yacht that's moored right in front of it. So
yeah,
you need to fix that.
You should get the Wachowski brothers to like fund your trip then.
Totally. I'm sure they'd be into
it. Not the Wachowskis.
Yep. Siblings.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah. Thank you.
But I was going to say you should probably get like liability insurance, right? Like that'd be the biggest thing, because then it doesn't matter if you hit the yacht.
Totally. Yeah.
As much.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
people that own yachts, I'm sure, aren't like, you know,
like, oh, come on,
lawsuit.
Wasn't using that anyways.
Well, yeah, I mean, also, exactly. This ship can travel at upwards of like 6 miles an hour, so we can get away really fast if we, yeah.
Yep. Well, it's a steamship.
Put it in stealth mode and just.
I like stealth mode as in like.
We turn the motor off and just float.
That's right. Yeah. No one can hear you anymore.
We hide in the corner and just look at our hands and assume nobody can see us.
I like that theory. I use that sometimes.
Yep.
So, that's cool. You will have to furnish a link for us so that we can promote that when the time comes.
Definitely. And thank you.
Is this going to be audio drama?
Yeah, it's going to be audio drama.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I am super excited.
And yeah, it'll be kind of a crossover between what's actually happening and the stories we write. And we'll be doing the writing along the way. So, you know,
if we
end up getting attacked by Asian carp, which are these like this awful invasive species in the river.
It could happen.
We're also going to be recording musicians along the way. I keep forgetting the important parts of this thing. Where,
nice.
They'll be part of the broadcast. So like this fiction that we're writing, the musicians we meet will be like brought in as characters basically. And they'll have stories that come from this radio station. But we'll also be doing sessions with them so we can feature their music as much as possible.
Great.
This is super cool. I am very excited for
this.
Are
you like already in contact with said musicians, or are you just like going to land somewhere and be like,
who plays
where's
music?
The, yeah.
Both.
Where's the musician?
Yep. Yeah, we're just going to have a bullhorn. That's our strategy.
We're looking for
just music.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Galen, one of the people that's in this project, just has this magnetic ability to attract people with talent. Mm-hmm. Like he could show up in any town. I feel like within 5 minutes he would know all the musicians there and be able to pick out the best one.
Nice.
And so Galen is actually in the book as well. This is the same guy that was of the like nemesis best friend.
He was the.
So this is kind of like a fan nonfiction offshoot of the book.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy that like went on his own bike tour before you guys started.
And he did it cooler.
He did it cooler. He did it better.
Yeah.
That was. I'm going to go cry in the corner now.
That was such an interesting.
Bad memories.
Why did he write a book?
I didn't mean to frame it that way. I'm so sorry. What I meant
was. He did,
was,
but I burnt the manuscript. So.
You can see how close the line is there. It's, you're like right there on it. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. This is all fascinating. I like river things.
I like that sentence. I like river stuff and shit.
Well, let's talk about what do you irons do you have in the fire, Leah?
Because what irons do I have in the
well,
fire?
You're always busy.
I have to say, those are nice pants you're wearing.
Oh, yeah.
Leah.
Thanks.
Are those Levi commuter jeans? Yeah.
Where could one possibly procure some of those? Where on earth are they available?
Say if I were a lady and I needed some jeans.
That was so subtle. I thought you were actually just, you know, complimenting my pants. And I'm like, sweet.
Me too, I mean, I am, but.
I'm complimenting your new Levi's pants. They haven't had those out that long, right? These are brand new
pants.
Sprocket
Podcast gets $15 every time we say Levi's.
Levi's commuters. No, but Levi's did just come out with a commuter line for women.
Yeah.
They had their men's line.
For like ever?
Not forever, but two or three years, I want to say it was. I can't remember exactly. So it's nice to.
I can't remember 3 years ago.
Yeah, me neither. It's nice to finally have some sizes that fit women.
Right.
Although I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that they only have up to size 32.
Okay.
Which, yeah, exactly. Which does not really serve all folks. And while I understand business and they're just trying to, you know, reach out to the people that they can make the most money from quickly, it kind of sucks.
It's kind of a pretty big assumption to say, like, if you ride a bike, that's the maximum size waist you should have.
Totally. Or just exist in general, that's what you're supposed to look like.
Mm.
I think it's unfortunately pervasive in the bike industry, though, with clothing especially, because it's a constant pushback of talking to people and that they'll only have up to like size 10. And what people have told me numerous times is, well, it's because, you know, cyclists are fit. Like,
not all of us.
What the hell does that even mean? And even right. if you are fit, like, people have different body shapes. And I think
sometimes,
it just perpetuates
yeah.
this notion that in order to ride a bike, you have to be.
My body's
know,
a different
specimen.
Shape about every day.
I was going to say I need different size pants, whether it's winter or summer.
Exactly.
But now that I have shit all over Levi's.
Well, see, that's why we're not being paid yeah. by them.
I and actually really like them. They're my favorite pair of pants ever.
Well, it's indicative, I think, of just something, like you said, in the entire industry. And we're still, I think we still think that biking is sporty stuff. And mm-hmm. We're slowly waking up to the fact that it's an everyday thing.
And I forget that because Portland is really different from a lot of other yeah. places around the country and that there is more of a generalized acceptance that, like, there are a lot of different ways that you can interact with a bicycle, that mm-hmm. there are more than two kinds of bicycle, those being road bikes and mountain bikes.
Right.
And I think going to other places and visiting shops there, realizing that it's viewed as a toy, as a tool for recreation only. And so we're pretty lucky.
Right. Well, what do you see the bicycle as? If it's not just a toy or a tool for recreation.
I don't know. I think it's anything. It's also transportation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's bad to use it for recreation or as a toy. It's good for competition. It's also good for adventure. And I think the fact of the matter is it's just too simplistic to say that it's only something that you use for recreational in your free time.
Yeah.
I
think
yeah.
we'd agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, just jumping off what you said about body types as well. I mean, I think some people might use it for recreation, for commuting, and just have a different body type that is healthy for them, right? Like, I was in the Upper Peninsula for a while this summer, and I went to this winter, and went to Marquette, which is basically the snow biking capital of the States.
Oh, yeah.
And Youpers, people from the Upper Peninsula, are generally,
yeah.
like, large people, right? And
yeah,
there were
Yuppie.
A ton of people riding these snow bikes around commuting to the university there, to the hospital, to wherever. And in Port, I mean, I guarantee that some of them would not fit into Levi's definition of what a svelte fit biker looks
yeah.
like. But clearly, you're biking all over the place.
Yeah. Would it be insensitive to say there was a lot of fat biking happening? I don't
yes.
know if that's. I don't know.
It might be.
I don't
gone
know
too
if
far.
That's.
Gone too far.
You have to
go to,
I think I might have. Send your angry letters to the sprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Right.
Yeah.
I really liked the uncomfortable silence that followed that.
No.
I was just reveling in that for a while.
I try and create those occasionally.
It's beautiful.
Somebody's got to.
It was good, actually.
Yeah.
It was a joke that needed to be made.
Well, okay. But there's also, you know, there is a shop in town that caters specifically to women and their needs on a bicycle.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
If only there was a shop.
You guys are so much better at promoting my business than I am. I was with someone the other day and we were planning an event that was like going to leave from the shop, Gladys Bikes. And they're like, so what do you want to do to like promote what you do? Well, like, you know, dozens and dozens of people are there. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, as a business, I'm supposed to be thinking of that. So, thanks, guys.
Well, we're here for you.
Yeah,
we're here
thank
for you.
You.
And honestly, if anybody comes to town, you should make sure you make your way up to Alberta Street. 29th and Alberta, is that right?
That's
Northeast.
That is
yeah.
correct.
You can have yourself a beer, you have yourself a cup of coffee, and you could stumble in one direction or the other for either reason
mm-hmm.
to find Gladys Bikes.
And I'll be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oversharing.
Yep.
Excellent.
That's why people come.
Yep.
Is there anything else new at Gladys Bikes that people should know about?
That's a really great question. Probably. Snack
okay.
Parade, I feel like, is
yeah.
the biggest thing that I'm talking about
right.
these days.
Yeah.
And,
well,
like, pretty much the only thing on my radar.
You have a
totally.
New mechanic, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I have a new mechanic. I suppose that's exciting. There,
yeah.
there are more people coming there all the time. I'm really psyched to say that we now have, like, a majority of women that are working there. The man that's there. Sorry, that's like
he's kind of a jerk.
He's kind of a jerk. No, this guy Jim that has worked there since the beginning is just the best person ever, and that's
yeah.
not an overstatement. He just really is wonderful.
Let's just sit with that. For
competition's
a little bit.
Over, folks.
I have spoken to this man, and he is in fact a very nice guy.
It's called the Guinness Book.
Nicest bike mechanic ever. Yeah.
But it's just great to have the two newest mechanics that we've brought on are both women. And it's great to have a staff that reflects the people that are coming in the door as well, because I think that's something that you don't see enough of.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really great.
So everybody. Oh, wait. Where's the – hang on. Ah, I'm so close.
Are you going to play a sound?
Yeah.
Is it the Skype song?
See, we're all
– Is it –
Let's all have a freestyle contest to the Skype song.
Oh, I'm just gonna sit back from that contest. How about I judge?
Just start off with what your name is and what you're here to say.
Okay, I'm just going to do this. If you're in Portland, go to Gladys Bikes.
Yeah.
Go to Gladys Bikes because there you will find a place that has no misogyny and is totally totally catered to your needs. And they serve anybody. So go there. Damn it.
And a saddle library.
Oh, right.
And we have a saddle library.
And go use their saddle library. All right.
I like that you said damn it at the end. Those are like my favorite words. Damn, I think, is the best.
It's so tame and passe at this point. I remember hearing the damn word in a movie at, like, you know.
Was it Ninja Turtles?
Maybe.
I like it.
Oh, yeah, Raphael. He was
my mom
bad
didn't
boy.
Want to let me go to that movie. She read about it in Time magazine.
I heard they said
they
swear.
Say a swear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I just remember that seemed so, like, I was like, you know. And now it comes. Now that's like, I had to sift through, like, a few more choice words that I didn't want to use. And I finally
and
landed on, well,
weird.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Like, phooey. No, not quite.
No. Damn, it's just so good.
Yeah.
I've had that Sophie B. Hawkins song, Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover,
ooh,
in my head for at least 6 years because I say damn so much.
Nice.
And every time I say it, I'm like, damn.
That's beautiful.
Thanks. I tell Brian really appreciates it.
I try to forget that song, and then you bring it back over and over again. It's a poltergeist.
I'm sorry. It's just, it's always there. It's always on the tip of my tongue.
It's a manifestation in your head.
It is.
Yeah. Well, so it's Gladys Bikes is the bike shop, and Brian Benson Writes is the website, and both of you are on the internet.
Yes.
Yeah. And we are professional.
We are on the internet.
Okay. Well, hey.
Right now.
Why don't we do some headlines and we'll go to our mail. And there is a ton of mail because we took a week off. And you know what happens when we take a week off? Everything. Everything rolls
in. I honestly thought you were just going to play the mail sounder.
Oh, wait. You know, wait, but I'll do that later. Oh. First of all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights. Pedal just fast as you can into the
morning light. All right, so first up, Tom
Allen.
Allen. Sorry, I just realized I had to cut and paste.
Oh, okay.
A thing here.
Oh, it's all good.
Tom Allen is working on a new film project.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to Iran and he's lucky because he's British and so he can do that. I don't think I would get to go to Iran right now and have a river adventure. But speaking of river adventures.
Just pretend you're Canadian.
That's true. Right. Yeah. I hear that works.
Yeah.
He said that he's been doing interesting things. Everybody, you know, whenever they see him, they're always like, you know, what's Tom up to now? Because he already biked around the world and got married because of it. And so it's kind of like you would think he would have peaked there and he's got nothing to do. But he's done nothing but upstage himself ever since then. So right now he's got this film project of, I want to say he did bicycling, canoeing or kayaking, and like animals, like riding a mammal or some kind.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he did this amazing
did
trip
animals.
With a friend.
All sorts of animals.
All animals. Yeah.
Is he the guy who made a...
Jennifer.
Oh, yeah. I saw the movie.
Yeah, totally. What was it? I can't remember the tagline. I'm bad with taglines, if you can't tell. But, yeah. Anyways, Jennifer.com or tomsbiketrip.com. You can find out. But he is raising funds right now. I just sent £9, I think, to him as a pledge.
£9 of what?
£9 of money.
Hi-yo.
Yeah. So, anyways, he's crowdfunding this thing, and... I think he's holding this movie, this film hostage. He's like, hey, we'll make a movie if you can pay for it. There I can't pay for it. He already paid for one movie. And anyways.
He has also been doing a lot of like free bike tours where he goes from town to town, like working his way through the town.
Yeah, he did a great set of documentation on that trip that he took about just like, hey, this is how much it cost. He got, I want to say it was about the equivalent of £25.
That sounds about
unless
right.
Unless it was $25.
Not including, I think he said not including the equipment. That's what he spent.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Well, because he had a great write-up on like how he basically assembled a bike for free.
Okay.
I want to say he spent $25 or so on a bike by, just by cannibalizing parts and going to shops and asking friends, say like, hey, you got any old sleeping bags or anything like that? He assembled all the stuff he needed for his tour basically for free. or really cheap. And then he spent no actual money.
Yeah, on the trip itself.
On the trip. Cool. And he went from, well, it was, the hashtag was...
Le Jog?
Free Le Jog, which is Land's End to John O'Groats, I want to say.
Oh, okay.
It's like, it's the one you do in Great Britain, yeah, where you go from like end to end or something.
Yeah.
So anyways, it can be done. So this guy is pretty cool. So there's that.
Next up, Aaron Green from a few episodes back. His book, We Were Like Sons, is funded.
It's all crowdfunding all the time.
Sons, like S-U-N or S-O-N?
S-O-N.
Important to clarify. Yes. We were like a massive of incandescent gas.
We were shining bright.
Yeah.
Yeah, so his write-up is, friends, it's funded and it's finished. 30 days ago, I was frantically refreshing my internet browser after all the Kickstarter had just launched. Being all nervous and self-conscious, eventually I knew I'd need to lessen my hold and allow my family and friends to take charge. Today it's complete. You funded this thing, you being everybody who donated on his Kickstarter. Round of applause for no more annoying emails from Aaron about pestering you to give.
I know that's not true.
No.
Oh, wait, well, maybe
about... I kid. Oh, you're talking about me.
Yeah. No, it's...
You get pestering emails from me all the time.
No, I'm really happy to hear that that he made it. And matter of fact, he was doing stretch goals at the end. So that
stretch
means,
goals?
Yeah, I think he was working on some publicity stuff.
I'm hoping to get like over a 60-degree lift.
There we go.
Hamstring.
That's the toughest one.
That's a hard stretch goal.
And you have time to do that after you've hit your fundraising goal.
That's right.
Finally, well, yeah, stretching.
I don't have to worry about like fundraising. I can just concentrate on stretching now.
Yep.
And if you've got a tight hamstring, there's nothing like a good stretch goal.
That's exactly.
You know what else there's nothing like?
What's that?
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
Well played.
All right,
well
then. Played. I just push buttons on screens.
I really wasn't sure what you're going to play at that point. You faked me out so many times.
First
up, the Stickman's son takes his first bike ride.
That's right.
Jeremiah's first bike ride, and he YouTubed it.
Yeah, and it's cute.
To our Twitter.
Super cute. So congratulations, Stickman and son.
That's awesome.
John from Goldendale. Saw a news story you might be interested in. Not bikey, but simple living. It harkens back to some of your food episodes, and we'll put the link up. It's a fantastic article about they did some rezoning in L.A., where apparently at one point it was illegal to grow gardens and things in the separation strip or whatever, like the
like
public land next to the next to the sidewalk, and a bunch of people have been doing this and it works out pretty well. So now it is no longer against the rules. Now you can grow vegetables in the parking strip or whatever, which is great. So I like that.
Next up, Gerald says Brock handled his foster encounter very well.
This is where I got yelled at by a guy in a Subaru at night.
Reverse psychology option. Brock could yell, "Get off the road, you damn cyclist."
I'll try that next time.
I had a guy tell me to pay attention because he was trying to pass me as I was turning left.
Pay attention to the person that's supposed to yield to the person turning in front
right.
of me. Yeah.
I was so flustered, all I could do was, "You pay attention."
Your mom's paying attention to something. Yeah. Ethan Georgie deals with parent drivers in school zones, makes an effort to maintain a zen-like calm. He sent an email about how he was like rolling through a school zone, and it's just like,
oh,
that's
man.
Where like all the people are like, kids shouldn't walk.
Yeah,
so they're driving
worst
like
of humanity
yeah.
comes out. It's so backwards
yeah.
in a way.
And making U-turns and like all, you know, people just, it's like there is no reason for that many vehicles anywhere, but especially at a school where people should be getting like, I know there are dangers in like walking to school. Like the world is a dangerous place, but at the same time, it's not that dangerous. Like kids could walk to school and it would be okay. Their parents could walk with them.
And
they weren't so damn busy.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Quit your jobs, parents. Quit your jobs.
Yeah.
Next up, Jim Gooden responds, earbuds are not. I use iPhone via its speaker cranked.
Good
Works great
you.
To hear your show and ears are free.
I'm curious how well that works for him because I know he lives in New York.
That's true. That's
and
a lot of, that's a lot
my
of traffic.
iPhone speaker is not that loud. I mean, the newer iPhone. Anybody have a newer iPhone or newer phone, like some other kind?
I have this big
Ish.
Brick.
Okay.
That is pretty big, though.
And it's pretty big.
Can you hear that thing if you're just, like, using the built-in speaker when you're riding your bike? Like, can you hear stuff out of it?
Maybe you could play that Sophie B. Hawkins song and we could.
If I played Sophie B. Hawkins in a quiet room, you'd be able to hear it from my phone. Not on a bike. I don't know.
But not riding the street?
No.
Okay. See, that's the only thing. Like, I've done the thing where. Do you guys ever use, like, a helmet strap to hold a phone next to your ear?
What?
Like, back in the days of flip phones, I used to do that.
I've never heard of this before.
I had a flip phone and I would, like, stick the phone, you know, just like in, like, cradle style. Where,
like in that Y where the helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, it opens up and the straps like kind of hold it together, and the phone was next to my ear and I could talk while I had both hands on my handlebars, and it worked out pretty well. I tried that with the iPhone, and sometimes it works, but like, I don't know, their security.
Sometimes I buy a new iPhone.
Exactly. Actually, I know someone who had done that, and I felt bad for them when I saw them on the side of the road and their new iPhone 5. They just got it like when the 5 came out, and the glass was all cracked. It was kind of a sad situation. So I don't know. What do you guys think about earbuds? Like, should they be worn ever when riding?
I'll do it sometimes not in a city. Uh-huh. On tours, if I'm out in side roads or like a huge shoulder highway, I'll do it. But in the city, I don't know. I don't trust myself to do it. I feel like I miss too much. I'm also not going to police other people for
doing it. Right. So you know what's right for you.
No.
That's what you're saying.
I sure don't. But. Yeah.
And maybe I should clarify my perspective on earbuds.
Well, we're still figuring these things out, right?
I think thanks for that.
Yeah. My perspective on earbuds is like I'm okay with one in if it's not the one that is next to the road.
Right.
Like if I'm using my shoulder side of the roadside earbud, I will listen to people talk because that helps me pass the commute hours by.
Mm-hmm.
But Leah, what do you think?
I think I'm with Brian, mm-hmm. that I can't really do it myself. Yeah. I get way too into whatever I'm listening to.
See, there is that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hawkins. Sophie.
You have to be really good at, like, controlling your brain, right? You have to, like, partition how much of your attention you're putting towards your motion stuff. And that's the problem that everybody has with driving and phones, you know, like texting and driving is a terrible thing to do.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
But people do it all the time, and a lot of things happen because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually because people are like, oh, I can do more with my brain than they actually can.
Well, you can. You can text and move in a way. I'm not going to say you can text and drive. it's not what you were doing that is going to like harm you or others. It's how fast you're going whilst doing it.
Right, right.
You know?
How fast you're going and how huge and heavy and dangerous your vehicle is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. But my thing that I always hammer down is it's the speed that kills you. It's the speed. You know, I could be on a bike and texting or whatever, which don't do. But if I'm going like just a couple miles an hour whilst doing that, I might be able to steer clear of an obstacle a lot better than if I'm trucking at 14 miles an hour on my bike
and
trying to text.
Like the worst that happens is a highway and kind of moment. Highway smashes into the car.
Boom. Down.
Totally.
Yeah.
I watch Brian have one of those ones.
Not texting.
Not texting.
Unforced error.
Just waving.
Just waving.
Yeah. Trying to be friendly.
I mean, putting that out there.
It's a decent goal, right? You want to be a friendly guy. So.
Yeah, I want to be a friendly guy and, you know, flip over my handlebars. And that was the first wheel that I built that I broke.
Now we're back to the beginning.
Yes.
let's see. Harm in New Zealand. Stumbled across this clip from 2012 as it's all cycling and skating. Thought you guys might like it. And it's actually a 45-minute documentary. So I have not yet finished it, but I have looked at it. And I like the ilk.
Yeah.
These guys have a cool. Yeah. They were like basically bike touring to places where they could skateboard.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing to bike tour.
Yeah.
With. Yeah.
Darren Elf from Bicycle Touring Pro. One of his first trips was his Lux Ride and was a skateboard that he took along.
That's
with
him. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like this idea.
Next up, Maren Souders sends us a car sharing link. And this is from OPB.
Yeah, this is a story about, Flight Car. This is, if you are leaving town, you can park your car at the airport. And it's kind of like the other car sharing services where, like, you know, you need to rent a car. I used that this last weekend. Actually, someone I knew, not that I knew that they were on Relay Rides is the one I used this time around.
Right.
But just to happen to be like a friend of Aaron Green's,
oh,
a mutual
cool.
friend. And I was like, hey, can I
Small
rent your car?
World.
And she said, sure. So
nice.
I did. But yeah, if you're flying out of town, you could park your car at the airport and then other people coming into the airport could rent your car while you're away. So seems like a good idea. Peanut Butter Jar Matt shares a few links. That's what he's going to be known as now.
Yeah.
I think.
Did I tell you I tried the overnight oats?
Oh, how was that?
It was pretty bad, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I tried to follow the steps.
Maybe you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I wasn't there.
I didn't have a peanut butter jar to try it
okay.
with.
Maybe that's the missing link.
Yeah, I used a mayonnaise jar.
Oh. Yeah, that seems like there'd be some issues there. Ba-doom.
Come on. This thing on.
Can you hear me in the back?
In the back.
Yeah, so Matt sent a couple links in about limiting your technology. There's one about artificial light. And, again, these are things I have not yet read because I was on spring break, kind of.
Spring break.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. Spring training.
Yeah, basic training in spring. So the other one was four arguments for the elimination of television, and I could probably get behind all of those, unless they tell me that I can't watch things on Netflix.
Well, I mean,
it's totally okay, right? All the people that said I hate you, kill your television.
I don't even own a television.
Yeah. Now they're watching all their TV on Netflix. Yeah,
because it's somehow totally different.
It's totally different.
It totally
it's
is.
Totally different.
Binge watched House of Cards in one day, but I don't own a television.
But I don't own a television.
That's right. Yeah. How was House of Cards?
I didn't actually finish.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
It's not that good this season.
This is a great essay that that goes from the perspective of like somebody watching Kevin Spacey's character and just going like, this guy's a schizophrenic. He's always turning to like some invisible camera and talking. Next up, Glenn from Morrowstone Island has a suggestion for more compassionate automobility. I'd suggest that all cars should be roofless to enhance opportunities for communication. It seems the facelessness and inability to communicate directly is what allows drivers to dehumanize others and behave so crudely and dangerously.
He put that really well. I would just say it stops you from being an asshole when you have to face up to it. But yes, his words were prettier.
Look at YouTube comments.
Seriously.
Yeah, if isolation and anonymity is any indicator of what an asshole you can be or get away with, one can get away with.
I like his email signatures, too. I'm just going to read this because it's fantastic. Glenn, yes. The terror of Scow Bay, in the Bramble Patch, Morrowstone Island, Salish Sea, Cascadia.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa. You don't mess with that guy.
Nope. I want to know where the Salish Sea is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need to go
it's
there.
It's up in Washington.
Oh, thank you.
That makes it less romantic somehow.
It's in Cascadia.
Yeah.
Near the San Juans, right?
It's down, it's like right at the northeastern corner of the Olympic Peninsula, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next up, Pathless Pedaled meets a Sprocket listener in Alabama.
And I don't know if we got his name or not. We definitely have his picture.
I never got his name.
Yeah. So he's just smiling at the camera, which is awesome. So hello, listener in Alabama.
Thank you.
Whoever you may be.
Bike local.
Let us know.
Bike local.
Yeah, that's what his shirt says.
That's a pretty awesome shirt. Is that a
Pathless Pedal shirt? Maybe.
That might be a Pathless Pedal shirt.
That's our nameless listener in Alabama.
Oh, I was looking.
Oh, you got it. Okay, yeah.
He's lovely.
Yeah. Marcus Graham is shining up an old bike for a touring event. He's from the U.K., and I'm not going to attempt my accent because I'm not very good at it. I'm into cycle touring, he says, but this year's project for me is an event called La Heroica. I think that's how the phonetic pronunciation has me saying it.
It started so confidently.
Yeah.
Just at the very end.
That first Heroica? Syllable, bam. In a lovely town called Bakewell in Derbyshire. It's a 100-mile gravel ride, but the thing is you have to do it on an old bike in old gear, your bike older than 1987. I'm rebuilding my first ever bike that I've kept for 30 years. It's a labor of love. The ride stops every 10 miles for local English fare and craft ales from the district, which is fantastic. La Heroica means the heroes in Italian, harkening back to when cycling in Europe was a passion like the vibe I get from you guys. Aww. It's kind of an antidote to the over-serious black carbon fiber frame riding, cycling is the new golf, assholes that have now swamped the previously beautiful UK cycle touring scene. It's kind of all about the love of cycling and a three-day family festival with bands, etc. So the wife and kids are coming. Should be real fun. Good old-fashioned fun. If you're into it, I'll send you updates. Yes, we are into it. Send us your updates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Call us. Call us.
Tell us what you really think.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Sorry. Got a little excited.
He says it's not all good news. The bike is in bits at the minute, and I have made a right pig's ear of trying to repaint it. And I don't know what a right pig's ear is, but I'm guessing it's bad.
Ear, yeah. Right,
well, it's better than the left pig's ear.
Seriously, I love those.
But
yep.
Yeah, does that mean like it's a dog toy or something, right? That's something you give your dog as a pig's ear?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, so maybe that's it. It's being chewed up by a dog.
Being chewed up by a
is
dog.
Is that it?
So much no, about gold, so. About pig's ears.
About,
stick
like,
with me, kid. We're yeah. going places.
Oh, the link from David Griffiths, who we had on recently, put this up on Facebook. There's a modern bicycle micro gypsy wagon. It's pretty fantastic. So just have a look at that. And then Johnny K sent us the best comment, and he sent us a voicemail. So we'll do both.
All right. Do you have the voicemail queued up? Or
I can
read.
Why don't you read that
up?
Thing? Yeah.
Hey, guys. Hate to tell you, but the price for all things have gone up, not just the rent. The cost of living is just too damn high. I put in the damn. Let's see if we get a law passed where all landlords are required to save money by riding bicycles. That way they will not have to demand such high prices. Bicycles are a wonderful vehicle. I hear it gets you places.
That's right. Yeah. And also, Johnny Kay and many other people commented on the last week's episode with Glenn and Darren up
in
Edmonton.
Oh, my gosh. We got so much response from
that. The Yegg Bike community was excited, as was everyone else. There was
there needs to be like an actual physical crossover where
yes.
we go to Edmonton.
Yes.
They come to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but we're together at the same time.
And we'll
time.
Pass torches.
And then you fall in love.
I heard Yak Bike. I heard wrong, right?
Oh,
you did
yes.
hear wrong.
That's unfortunate.
YEG, although Yak Bike would also be cool.
Yeah. I want to know more about the Yak Bike community.
Right. Well, let's start the hashtag and see
it's
what.
It's a different location.
Yeah.
Anybody can make a hashtag. So if you'd like put that up on Twitter and then say like, show me
with
some
like
yak
a
bike
badly
stuff.
Photoshopped picture of a yak riding a bike.
That was the Oregon Manifest where they compete to design new bicycles. I remember one year I saw, it was the one that was covered in goat fur, I think, and had like mm-hmm. a set of like curling horns.
Yeah, no, I remember that one.
You saw that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like the rims, because it was a disc brake bike, the rims also had fur, and the pedals had fur on them too. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, Johnny K's phone call.
Brock and Aaron, this is Johnny K. You know, over the years, I've called in and I've said that this show is really cool and that show is really cool. This show is really awesome and that show is this and that. But anyhow, after this show this week, I had to call in. I just had to, because this is an amazing show. They really got your format and everything down to a T. So you guys, y'all are going to have competition. That's what I see. That's how I see it. Now you got competition out there. So I don't know. I mean, y'all are going to have to step up your game. That's all I can say. Because those boys up north, they got your number.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
That's, yeah.
I like how that changed from a compliment to a threat.
No,
out.
We're going to lose Johnny K as a listener to the people up north.
I don't think we'll lose him.
Those Canadians, they take our jobs.
There's enough Johnny K to go around. He's already a huge fan of the Pedal Shift project as well. So,
Nice.
I think Snack Parade, he's going to be on that. Everybody.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Important stuff there.
Seriously, yeah.
Yep.
So, anyways, thanks again to Glenn and Darren for doing the lion's share of the work last week.
It was a great show.
Yeah.
And I think the response that we've got is just a tip of the iceberg for them.
Totally.
I think they're onto something good up there, and they can totally, they totally can do this.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is a good time to wrap everything up.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text 250-3847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen-Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan Griskins, Gonzalez.
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood.
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Knows.
Lars V, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster.
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Matt B.
Patrick Arcane, Gabriel Trainer, and Sebastian Poole.
And it's our chain, but awesome. Have a good night.
Chain.
Let me come over here and look at your list of things.
It's now blue. Nope, wait, it's regular. Not blue.
Did I just put beer in your pannier?
Probably.
Oh, it's on the outside. Okay, we're good.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
Okay, here we go. Since Leah is going to be late.
Tell me she's just going to, like, barge in, and we all have to go, like, oh, yes. It's Leah Benson!
She's actually going to run through the wall.
And that's then our she's going to go, yeah!
Take a big bite from the sledgehammer.
Whenever Leah shows up, we start talking about you guys.
Cool, yeah. I'm going to have nothing to say until she's here. Like, I can start sentences, but I can't finish them.
The problem with you. What was that Star Trek episode where they had binaries and there was like, you know, they came in sets and they all had to talk together?
Was that classic or next gen?
That was next gen, but it was classic next gen. Oh. It was like season one. Right. It was back when the costumes still sucked.
You are listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.